welcome back for another episode of Two Dudes, One God Pod. I'm Trey, your host, and I've got Pat Lacey with me.
Yep.
And today, we have a special guest. We have David Wise with us today. Say hi, David.
Hi, David.
That was loud. David, introduce yourself a little bit. I know you a little bit from church and from camp. And
I am fixing to be 37. I was born and raised in Canyon, Texas.
Canyon? Yep. Really?
No joke. So was my mom.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's pretty much the armpit of Texas. Just that's personal experience, not, you know, reality. But
I thought the armpit of Texas was like Waco.
Mm. No. I mean, there's two armpits, I guess. So, I mean, it's possible. I definitely know where the butthole's at. And it's Houston all the way. Yeah. The taint is definitely Odessa. Yeah. I'm not a fan of any of those places.
Very big place.
Yeah. But anyway, I moved to East Texas when I was 11.
Mm-hmm.
And been here ever since.
How'd you end up in East Texas?
You know, Pat, sometimes I want to stab you in the throat. So by a series of events that, I'm trying to be easy on the others involved, since this is recorded and all. So me and my mom didn't have such a great relationship when I was a kid. It has gotten a lot better in my, you know, adult years, but I was not a model child.
Mm.
I was naturally prone to violence. I was, you know, always fighting, always just looking to hurt people, basically. Mm. There's, you know, a thousand different reasons for that, but that led to me not being controllable by my mother. I didn't have a father or father figure growing up, so it was just her, and she was physically disabled. She's got cerebral palsy, so she wasn't able to control me, because once I figured out that she couldn't catch me, I was just, you know, running from her. We'd make fun of it now, you know, just joke with each other, but she had a cane that had a hook on it. So I mean, if you didn't get a good enough head start, she would hook your ankle with that cane and, you know, you'd take a tumble. But
that's overcoming right there.
It's over something, for sure. But, that's how that's the short version of how I ended up in East Texas.
Yeah.
Wait, how?
So I was a terrible kid. My mom couldn't control me.
So she sent you to East Texas?
In a roundabout way, yes.
Did she come with you?
No, she did not. I mean, God knows what he's doing. I definitely needed out of Canyon. Mm. Needed out of the situation that I'd made for myself. Mm. But I wasn't expecting it to be... I wasn't wanting it to go the way that it happened. But... like I said, God knows what he's doing, and I'm here now. So,
here we are. You came here, and I think you met Travis at some point.
Yeah,
pretty shortly after that, or
very shortly after. Yeah, like the summer, the first summer that I was, you know, officially in East Texan, I met Travis through Rock and Sea Ranch.
Hmm.
He was my, I guess, camp counselor type deal. I don't know that he was actually like the counselor. He might have been like in training or something like that, but that's where I met Travis. We seemed to, you know, link up pretty cool back then.
I feel like his version of it was like your grandfather or somebody dropped you off and was like, hey, you do something with them.
That's, you know, that's also a thing I was going to avoid, just dragging everybody through the dirt. But, yeah, that's also how that happened. I mean, yeah, my grandpa took me to Matt Clapp, who he had met through some church function, and was like, you got the summer to turn this kid around, or I'm going to turn him around and send him back to Canyon. Mm. So Matt Clapp kind of took me under his wing, but more of in a authoritative, you know, something that, not that I saw Matt as a father figure, but what I should have had from a father is the things that he taught me in those summers that I did get to spend with him. But, yeah, my grandpa was, he wanted to be a grandpa. He didn't want to be a dad.
Mm. Yeah.
So.
And that's always hard to be in that position. You know, I couldn't imagine, like, just kind of being thrusted that upon you type thing.
Well, it definitely made me change, number one. I had to change a lot of things that I was doing just to be able to be around Matt because he, you know, there was zero tolerance for the dumb stuff. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was either shape up or ship out, and I didn't want to ship out. So,
yeah,
you know, I had to learn how to follow some rules, and I'm not saying that I mastered it because I obviously did not do that. But in the summers that I did get to spend with Matt and Travis, I did learn how to control a lot of things. As I got older, it seems like I had forgotten how to do that in some instances of life, but the Rockin' Seed did shape the road that I was on and kind of put some bumpers out for me.
So it was like a summer camp, like a Christian summer
camp. It was like around horses and stuff, wasn't it?
It was like a working ranch. I mean,
yeah, it was a Christian camp on a working ranch. That was their whole
theory model. Was like, work the kids hard and they'll be tired, and
it worked. I've experienced it.
Do you know Nathan Crow?
It doesn't sound familiar.
He married Catherine Clapp, I think. No?
I think Catherine is the daughter. I never got to know her.
And then her mom and her, they run Janie's Cakes.
Right. Yeah, I know Miss Janie. she was always super sweet to me. I got to be fairly good buddies with Travis Clapp. Even, you know, I went to Winona for a pretty decent while until bad decisions caught up with me again. But even, you know, through the Winona FFA program, we got to be involved with Rockin' Sea and Matt and Travis Clapp. So it was a continued relationship. It wasn't just like I went to some summer camp one time and, you know, just learned everything I needed to know in one summer. That's not.
And you were, what, 11, 12, 14 then?
I was 11 my first trip, yeah.
Got it. Well, do you want to fast forward a little bit? Because, like, now you're kind of like a big, scary guy that drives, like, a one-ton dually and has spikes on your
15 kids. And
yeah, you've got – I mean, you want to tell us, like, however much or little you want to share, but, like – you know, I think that the three of us, like, if we just, like, walked into a store, you know, like, people tend to kind of recoil when they see me. And I don't know if you experience that, too, but
I do. I'm not real sure if it's my RBF or if it's my size, if it's tattoos. I mean, I don't know, but I do experience that often.
I used to wear more silver jewelry. I had a coworker, his wife came up to eat lunch with him one day, and then he was like, dude, my wife thinks she might be in the mafia. I was like, because I have silver jewelry? I thought they wore gold. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm definitely not in the mafia, but I do like cool rings, man.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, I'm gonna rock them. I've had people tell me they look tacky. I don't care. I was born white trash. So,
amen.
Yeah, I'm gonna trailer park it up in this mug.
So you're married. You've got some children, plural.
Yes, been married for 15 years. Just recently celebrated our 15th. I've got 4 kids. One is almost 18. That's Kai. My oldest daughter is Gracie. She's 13. My youngest daughter is Ellie. She is 11. And then I got Noah. He's 5. And, that pretty much completes my family unit there, minus the extras. There's always extras. We got Sarita and Rocky and, you know, tons of other folks up in and out.
So you've been married for 15 years and you've got a gang of kids or a gaggle or...
Yeah, I don't know if it's a crew, a flock, a gaggle. It's definitely chaos for sure. My oldest has always been like all but perfect. Like really never really had any trouble out of him at school. I mean, even at home, I think he might have got his butt busted like 3 times growing up. He's always been like top-notch kid. Puberty hit him, you know, fairly hard and kind of confused things for a minute, but luckily we're all on the other side of that now. Gracie, she is an introvert extrovert. She's definitely introverted in crowds and in front of people she don't know, but once she knows you, you can't shut that heifer up, man. She's loud. Ellie, she's my little artsy kid. She's gentle but very brash. She takes after me on the violence part. She loves to fight. She likes to make kids bleed. I think she's kind of growing out of some of that. But then we got Noah. And Noah, I mean, just looking at y'all's faces now, I know they can't see y'all's faces, but... Y'all know Noah, so
I like Noah.
I love Noah. Yeah. Like, he's one of my favorite kids out there.
He's hard to not love.
Yeah,
he's a good time.
At the same time, he's also hard not to drop kick dead in the face, you know, just because he's a mile a minute, and he's very impulsive. I mean, it's just something we're working through, you know.
I think the first time I remember seeing him and understanding who he was, you came to me and you were like, pretty sure my boy just punched your son in the face. And I'm like, are you sure it happened? Because they look like they're all playing. And you're like, I watched it happen.
Yeah. And
Sebastian was like, I don't know why he did it.
But we're friends now.
He also likes to fight. I can't claim, you know, genetic responsibility for that one just because, you know, of how we obtained him. But
Noah's not your biological child,
right? He's actually a family member's biological kid, but through bad decisions and, you know, state intervention, Noah is now ours.
Okay.
But yeah, he's definitely the challenge that I think God wanted to show me I needed.
Brittany wasn't challenging enough.
You know,
the other 3 kids weren't challenging enough.
The first 3 were. I really didn't have many problems at all. Brittany's always taken care of like the day to day. I was either, you know, just the disciplinarian, or I got to do the fun stuff most of the time. You know, I get to hang out with the kids and play and all that. But she was always doing, you know, the day-to-day stuff.
Well, I mean, I'll just say this. It's been fun getting to know your family, just getting to watch y'all's dynamics, you and Brittany. Or like, I took a picture of y'all the other day and sent it to you, and she was like out. She was out of sleep. We're watching the fight. She is sleeping.
Yeah.
Like, and she probably didn't mouth. Like. She probably didn't like the picture, but it was pretty good.
I didn't show her. I told her that you took one while she was asleep, and she was like, "Oh my god, seriously?" Because she knows what she looks like when she's asleep.
But Brittany's a good time too. Like, we were at camp, and like, I think she was about to throw hands with this other mom at camp.
She's also not afraid of charges. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Her versus the state of Texas has no bearing on fear. There's not much she's scared of in that, right? But, luckily, God sent us Noah. Mm-hmm. I think even as like a family dynamic, we needed it. There's been times when I definitely questioned it, but, I think where we're currently at, when we're, you know, we're finally seeing progress in behavior and, you know, things like that, it's kind of coming to light that, you know, we're learning just as much as he is.
I mean, if you don't mind, like, no, you came to check in one morning, you're like, I think I messed up. And we're like, what happened? And you're like, well, you know, he keeps getting in trouble in school. So I set him down and I was like, you know, I think we could return you to where we got you from, basically. that he was super upset about it. And then the next time I saw you, you're like, I don't think he understood that conversation, you know, the same way I thought he did.
Yeah, because he got in trouble the very next day and was like, okay, I guess I got to go back, but can I take my Ninja Turtle shirt? And I'm like, bro, like, there's just no way to wrap your head around that. I was really worried that I traumatized him over the whole conversation, but luckily he just skimmed the top of his head and he kept rolling.
Water on a duck's head.
I'm in the same boat today because my stepson got sent to the office because he's gotten in trouble every day this week for not listening to the teacher and for talking. And so when the principal asked him, hey, did you hear the teacher ask you to stop talking? He said, yeah, I heard her, but, you know, I just wanted to talk with my friends. So, like, what do you do? So, like, I tell him on the way home, I'm like, I guess we can send you back to live with your dad. He's just silent, you know? I'm like, oh, no, it probably didn't work.
Yeah,
but
yeah, it probably didn't. I think also, you know, we need to teach our kids to not answer questions that are being pressured under duress.
I'm with you 100%. Yeah,
like,
well, we want to teach them to tell the truth and be truthful.
But to be smart about it,
But, like, how do you teach that without it coming back and biting you, you know? I mean, because they're going to use it on you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I want to teach my kids for sure how to say, I want a lawyer, you know?
Yeah, if you're saying, I know my rights, it's clear that you don't. So what do you do for work, David?
So just about anything, really. I'm not above scrubbing toilets, or, I mean, I can build you a house. It's really no in-between for me. What I like to pursue is building. I love doing remodels. Exterior is my favorite, but interior is not a far second.
Gotcha. Any exciting projects coming up?
I do have a couple of exciting ones. I'm looking at doing a large commercial project for a very well-known water distribution company. I'm pretty excited about that one. Other than that, it's just really tying up a whole bunch of loose ends, just, you know, weather related or schedule related or my poor time management related.
Which is easy to do. I know I've actually worked on a couple of jobs with you. Yeah. Like whenever I was a butcher and you know, there was a couple of times whenever I was a little bit slow and everything, and I know we had had a conversation about concrete, and I didn't really think much about it because, you know, I was committed to doing this butcher thing and was really enjoying it. But then I remember I was going through a financial situation where I was like, dang. Actually, I was buying a plane ticket for my daughter to come over here. And I had got the money together. I had, you know, thought that I had crossed all my T's and dotted my I's. And it came down to needing insurance. And I was literally like, man, that's like $750. I don't know how the heck I'm going to pay that. And this man, David Wise, called me up like that evening and was like, hey, you think I can get you for 2 days, which added up to $750. And I was like, yeah, absolutely. I can do that. When do you want it? And he's like, I don't know. We'll figure it out. But God told me that you need the money. Like right now. So you want this money? And I was like, absolutely. And that was such a moment where I feel like God used you and really like introduced me to your heart as far as helping people, your willingness to step out and put yourself in an uncomfortable position and to help somebody just by being obedient. And so that's the impression that I really got from David Wise, in the very beginning of our relationship. And you've maintained that pretty well. And, you know, I definitely,
even though that you believe the earth is a pancake,
even though I believe the earth is a pancake.
I'm not good at all with taking compliments. So
I know. That's why I'm giving it to you.
I figured, but, I appreciate that. Yeah, I remember that well. So I don't always hear God, but I don't always listen. Mm. When I am focused on listening, I feel like, you know, I do not hear audible things, but I feel something in my heart. And
right.
I haven't been met with a time yet that what I felt in my heart was completely off base or that I was wrong in feeling that way. Every single time that God has laid something on my heart, it has been simply because that's what he wanted. And I just needed to be a funnel to use to do, you know, what he needed done. So, it's cool to be recognized on that though.
Yeah. And I definitely appreciate it and look forward to seeing you being used in that way, you know.
Yeah, I need to slow down a little bit every now and then and focus on listening, because there are even the majority of my days I just don't listen. But something I'm working on.
I do want to get into when you were saved, your salvation, and what your relationship with God's like now, because I feel like you're a great example. You know, we joke around about some of the other guys that we know, you know, like one of them being like Alpha Dad or whatever. But I think that as a father, as a husband, you've got a lot to offer. Mm. And I don't think that we're just born with that. I think that is evidence of a relationship with God.
Mm. Well, I appreciate that, Trey. That's another thing. I'm not too great at accepting compliments, so it does make
it's
me
more
feel
of an affirmation than
right, right. I'm not good at accepting affirmations either. It's just something makes me feel awkward. But
So do you think that that's because you believe that you're unworthy, or that you have struggled with a belief that you're unworthy of love? And
I 1,000 have struggled with that belief. I think currently it's not so much that, like, that I don't believe it, because I do believe it, but it's more I just don't know what to say, because I'm not used to getting compliments or being affirmed on things. So I don't know what my response needs to be besides thanks, man. You know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah, so, yeah. I mean, that's fair. I mean, yeah. but like, I think that you can tell a lot about a man by how his wife treats him in public. And like, you know, I've seen you and your wife.
Yeah.
Not only in public, but in mixed company. It's clear what kind of a man you are to me, you know? And I've had other people that we sit in church with that I don't really know have like come up to my wife and been like, I love sitting behind y'all at church because I could tell that like y'all are really happy and y'all really love each other. And you know, I think y'all would probably agree that is a choice and an effort, you know,
like 1,000%.
A lot of times it's easy. I'm not going to lie. It's pretty easy to love my wife, but like you start adding kids and jobs and dogs and, you know, other stuff in, and you have to make an absolute choice, right? The same way I make a choice to pray, the same way I make a choice to try to align my actions with what God wants, I make a choice to be right with my wife, you know, and like submit to that relationship, you know.
It definitely does require effort. Some days it's, you know, effortless. It's super easy. There's no friction there at all. And then some days there's, you know, so much friction it's almost unbearable.
But like, that's exciting to me. You know, I mean, it's something I've had to get used to. Is like,
it is exciting, I guess.
Well, you had a pretty wild life, right?
Yeah.
Like I feel like we've skipped some of the wildness. That's cool. Like, I've had a really wild life, dude. I had to get used to like not having fights. You know.
Yeah.
Like the woman I dated prior to my wife, there's ring camera video of me naked in the front yard at 3 a.m. talking about, why are you leaving? Come back. You know, like. Like, you know, that was normal, you know, that was normal for Trey. And so, you know, when you make it days and months and, you know, years without that, it's like the first time things are like kind of healthy. Mm. You're like, I don't know if this is, something's weird.
This doesn't seem right.
Yeah. It, getting with my wife was definitely a culture shock. She's a spitfire for sure, but at least to me, she's always been gentle. She's been soft. She's been leadable. Obviously, there are times when, you know, we both have screwed the pooch on, you know, being leadable and being teachable and all that, but... For the most part, the 15 years that we've been together have been, you know, pretty good. I like to joke around and say, you know, we've been married for 15 years, but two of them have been great. And there's some truth to that, just because, you know, we got married young and we were both really dumb, super bullheaded, and we didn't like rules, me mainly. But, you know, she definitely had some play in that. But
was it difficult for you to accept the love of your wife?
I think it was difficult for me to believe it.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
But do you find it hard to love her?
No, it's the easiest thing, man. Like it's so easy to love her. It's hard being mad at her. Like, it's way harder to be mad than it is to just be like, you know what, babe, it's all good, you know, let's just forget about it.
Yeah.
But that didn't used to be the case. Like, that took some, you know, learning on how to be able to control that. But that was just my, you know, immaturity poking his head out.
Michelle tells me all the time, she's like, I was trying to be mad at you, but, you know, like even Lexi will get mad at me about something, and then like she'll start laughing. I'm like, "What's wrong?" She's like, "You're pretty funny."
Yeah.
You know, like I think that's a huge green flag if it's tough to hold on to a resentment against my wife or my kids. I mean, like, how easy is it to love Noah?
Most days it's yeah. pretty easy.
Or any of the other kids, right? Yeah. And so I think that I didn't clearly understand in my life that I had an issue with like accepting love until I was in my 30s. And that realization came with romantic relationships for me. But I quickly made the jump, you know, like Jeff Butler pulled me aside. I went to boot camp, you know, and he was like, "You're worthy of love." And I was like, "No, I'm not." I just knew I wasn't, you know? And so like that has been a real game changer, like trying to work with God's help, trying to work on that. Like that's been huge for me and God. And I think that there's been like a lot of fruit in my personal relationships that have come from it. And like, I agree, it's tough when people give you a compliment, you're like, and I don't know if that's a guy thing. You know?
I think that's a big thing that's
I think it's a trauma thing, really.
Okay.
Like, yeah. I mean, just it might be just personal experience, yeah. But I mean, I think a lot of, at least my reservations on being able to accept love or accept, you know, compliments, affirmation, whatever, I think it all stems from, you know, just like childhood era trauma. I mean, there's, you know, whole abandonment stuff going on, and there was, you know, like all kinds of just craziness that, I mean, there's nowhere for that to go except for just deeper inside. So,
I'm sure
that's where
you have resentment and unforgiveness, and then you get a hard heart, and then you can get to a place where it seems like, you know, desperation doesn't do it justice, you know?
Yeah.
Like you get to a place where it's just hopeless. And I think God shines light on that and
redeems it.
Yeah. I think that some of the most powerful men I've ever met, you two guys being two of them, it's being able to confront that and go, okay, I'm not worthy, but like through God,
yeah,
you know, I can do these things, you know?
Right.
And I think that, you know, David, our wives, our families, they're a blessing from God. God's trusted us to be good shepherds of what we've been given.
Right.
You know?
That's one thing that has improved my marriage and my relationship with God in itself is realizing that, you know, it's my job, like, as a husband, as a follower of Christ, to actively love my wife, even when there's days that she's unlovable. There, it's my job to love her like Jesus loved the church. I mean, I know it's used almost to the point where it's cliche, but like it's the truth, because there's no greater love than Jesus's love for the church, and his bride is us.
Yeah.
And I mean, he died for us whenever we were screaming, you know, crucify him. He still died because he loved us. And if my job is to love my wife like he loves the church, then I have no choice but to lay it down whenever she's, you know, screaming crucify him, you know. But
have y'all done the love and respect class?
No, we have not.
Oh, dude.
I mean, we've had the real life version.
Yeah.
The sit downs.
Yeah.
It's cool, and they've got one. I think Pat might go. They've got one the week of Valentine's Day up at Crossbrand. But
I've been really lucky. Not even lucky, just blessed, really.
Yeah.
I always use the term lucky, but
you know, we talked about that Sunday, luck, like, and
what I actually mean is blessed.
Right.
But I've been really blessed to have a circle of friends now that can keep me in check.
Speak to your blind spots.
Yeah. I mean, I've had quite a few blind spots, and that there are times when I needed to be checked. And luckily, I've got friends that are ballsy enough to be able to be like, say, bro. Like, you need to fix this. You need to fix that.
Mm-hmm.
And then not feel bad about it. Not beat around the bush. They're just, you know, straight to the point. Hey, you're screwing up. And if you don't stop screwing up, then the circle that you've built is not going to be your circle anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm hella grateful for that. the wilderness circle that I have, you know, been blessed to become a part of has changed the trajectory of my life as a man and my life as a husband and a leader of my family. I really don't believe that if I would have stopped coming to Wilderness, or if I would have skipped out on giving Wilderness a shot, I don't believe that I would be anywhere close to the same person that I am currently. Not that I'm anywhere near perfect, because believe me, I'm not, but I would have been way worse.
Yeah.
We talked a little bit Sunday about luck and prayer. Like, do you pray with your wife?
So it's a kind of an odd topic for us, because I am like I'm a yell prayer. I mean, I'm not scared of prayer. I'll do it any time of day, anywhere, as loud or as quiet as needed. Amen. I mean, I'm not afraid of it. I use it as a weapon. I mean, I'm down for the get down.
Yeah, buddy.
But my wife, on the other hand, she is all internal. Mm. Like, she's also a prayer warrior. Like, don't, you know, let her quietness fool you, but it's 100% internal. I've been married to her 15 years, and I've never in my life heard her pray out loud. Mm. Never. I've seen her pray. I've seen her go to battle, but I've never heard her audibly pray at all. But we do pray together, as far as, you know, like before we go to bed, we'll pray, or I will pray out loud.
Mm-hmm.
We actually,
have you always done that, or is that?
So it used to be a very common thing. And then I think over time we just kind of got out of the habit of it, really.
Mm-hmm.
But it's weird that this whole topic got brought up, because last night I actually was sitting in my chair thinking about Paul Roberts on one of your last episodes, about how the people that come to him for marriage counseling and for, you know, having marital problems or whatever, none of them pray together.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's something that we used to do, and it used to be natural and normal. And I told Brittany, I was like, so I want to get back to praying together. I was like, I'm not saying you got to pray out loud, or, you know, like I'm mm-hmm. over trying mm-hmm. to force that. But
right.
It's something that I'm serious about, and like, we just need to start doing it. And she was like, sweet, like, let's do it. So when we went to bed, like, I prayed over her, you know, prayed for our marriage and blah, 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 blah. But, yeah, last night was the first night on the new cycle.
That's cool.
So,
that's awesome.
How did it feel? Was it like, it's awkward, right? It's like, it's a little uncomfortable, not really.
Not for us, man. It's been, our walk with Jesus as a married couple has been such a roller coaster ride. And I think, I mean, the only reason that we're still married is that we knew how to use that weapon.
Yeah.
And after dinner last night, when me and Gracie came home from youth group,
mm-hmm.
Brittany had told me about a dream that Noah had. And she said she wasn't real sure that it was a dream, or that he was just kind of half asleep, but he was crying and screaming, and Ellie went into his room. And he told Ellie that there was a man standing at the foot of his bed and just standing there staring at him. Mm-hmm. And it scared him so bad, you know, that he was screaming and hollering and all that. I don't think bad dreams are abnormal for mm-hmm. kids, you know. I think it's super common. But what made me feel awesome as a father was Ellie's first response wasn't to go wake up mom and dad. Her first response was to immediately rebuke Satan.
Yeah, buddy.
Mm-hmm. And throw her hands in the air.
Yeah.
And pray to Jesus. Like, We didn't even get woken up. We didn't find out about this until, you know, the next morning. So
the hair is standing up on my neck right now.
Like, that's what the power of prayer has done in my family. Like, I'm proud that I'm a yell prayer. I'm proud that I don't have a problem with, you know, anytime, any place, because my kids see that.
Yeah.
And now my kids know that there is power in the name of Jesus. And whenever his name is even uttered, the devil's got to go.
Amen.
So. Yeah.
And that's seeing the fruits of your leadership.
Yes.
In that. Like, that is amazing.
I didn't find that story out until, you know, I got home from youth group last night. And I asked Brittany, I was like, man, we got any anointing oil in the house? And she was like, no, you left it at the hospital the last time you went and prayed for somebody. And I was like, well, so I've got some olive oil, and the power's not in the oil anyway. So
exactly. Yeah.
I was like, how about let's just go around the house and just anoint the house? Mm-hmm. So me and Brittany, we went around the house. We anointed everything. We anointed our kids. We prayed over them. We anointed the windows, the doors. I mean, we anointed everything.
Did you get your dogs?
No, I didn't get the dogs. Okay. Dogs don't have souls. Like, I like them while they're here, but if they got to go, they got to go.
Yeah.
You know, that's just kind of how dogs are. But
you know, both of y'all know my wife is figuring a lot of this out, and
she's a semi-believer.
I think she believes, but she's recently started praying, and
so you don't pray if you don't believe.
You know, that's true. That's true. I think there's a difference between believing that God exists and having salvation, you know, maybe. So, but not to get, like, I don't want to talk about her.
I want to tell you
this crazy story. So like, we went to camp, and you went to both camps.
I did.
Both of the AFCC cow camps. And so Michelle and I went to the kid one, and Colby, the guy we talked to a week ago or whatever, his fiance was the wrangler with Michelle's crew. And so, like, one of the girls started crying or something, and she was like, Michelle, why don't you pray with her? And Michelle's like, I can't. And so she did. And she's asked me to pray for her and with her, and she started praying now too. But like a month or two ago, Sebastian, the 10-year-old, I don't remember if he was throwing up and having diarrhea or just diarrhea or whatever, but he was like in pain in the bathroom, and like Michelle was in the bathroom with him, and he's like hunched over, and he's like, Mom, will you pray for me? I'm like, it's just hilarious how that stuff, God just uses that stuff, you know, he just uses it. When I was asking earlier, like, how hard is it to love your wife, or how hard is it to love Noah or the other kids? Somehow it's hard for me to think that I'm worthy of love, but it's like real easy for me to love the kids or my wife.
Yeah.
And it's easy for me to understand that God's forgiven me.
Yeah.
So like, why do I struggle? Why do I struggle with that? Like, my dad had a favorite gospel song, and a quartet sang it at his funeral, and it's like, I don't remember what it was called. I'm gonna try to find it real quick because I found it. It's a Bill and Gloria Gaither song. You know, it's a Gaither family reunion song or whatever. And it's like, I'm gonna let the glory roll when the roll is called in glory. I'm gonna be beside myself when I get beside the King that day. And then he says, well, I don't know why I become a little shy when I get around a whole lot of people, and I can't figure out why I never can shout about the love that floods my soul. Well, I must confess, I can't express the feelings deep inside me, but the thing I know and cannot show one day will overflow. So we kind of talked about maybe that's a trauma thing, but I think that's a man thing, you know? That's like we think, because it's a meritocracy. Being a man, outside of religion, outside of God, you're as valuable as the last good stuff you did.
Yeah.
You know, like,
man's love is very transactional.
Yeah, 100%. And so women just love stuff. They're just born. They just love things. They love dogs and puppies and cats and guys. And, you know, they love the kids and babies.
Yeah.
Like, guys.
I think whenever, like, you're raised up in a society that says that, you know, you've got to do this and do that to receive love of any type. And we're told, you know, sit down, shut up, don't do that, you know, quit climbing the walls, quit doing all this crazy manly stuff. You know, that's just the upraising. Like, that's just to function. And then on top of that, whenever you start to have your own insecurities that aren't even from the outside world, but they're things that you're aware internally that are wrong, that you need to change, that you need to work on, then whenever you start looking in the mirror, you really start hating that dude, because then you really start seeing all the insecurities.
Well, I think that's the devil. You know, the devil tells you the lie. The devil tells you, well, you sinned, you did this, remember you did this, so you don't have the authority to pray with your wife, you know? But, like, David, does Brittany help you with that stuff? Does she speak life into you? Does she tell you, like, hey, I saw this, I saw that, or what's going on with this? We need to talk. I mean, do y'all have that kind of...
So, there are times when she can speak life. Not that she speaks death, but a lot of times, like, she doesn't speak much of anything in that regard. She's not very vocal about much of nothing, honestly. I mean, besides, you know,
well, is she
general,
like,
conversation.
Is she like a thermometer? You know, like when you look at her and you see her face.
I can definitely.
And you're like, I'm messing up.
Yep. Yep.
And so, but I think you're the thermostat, you know, you're not the thermometer, you're the thermostat. And like, I have a friend in my first marriage, I was like, man, you know, we're always yelling, everything's bad. And he was like, if you want it to be quiet in your house, then shut up.
Yeah.
And she's told me, you know what I mean? There's two kinds of teachers. There's a teacher who's like, hey, I told y'all to be quiet. Then there's the one that just sits there and watches until they all look, you know?
Yeah.
And which one has the most power? Because if you win an argument by screaming louder, like, did you really win the argument?
Yeah.
If you win the argument by physical force, did you lose or did you win? You know,
She has expressed to me multiple times that, you know, she gauges her mood off of mine. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if I come in from work and I'm all frustrated and I'm pissed off and, you know, la da 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 da, then that definitely has a effect on mm-hmm. how her mood is going to be the rest of the evening. But if I leave all that crap outside in the truck,
mm-hmm.
when I come home, if I make it just about my family, then there's nothing to be pissed off about, and, you know, mm-hmm. mostly. So,
except maybe the dog pissing off or something.
You know, there's little things here and there, but if I focus on leading my family's emotion mm-hmm. instead of letting my family's emotion lead me, then I tend to have a better outcome.
Mm-hmm. When you're doing your things throughout the day, are you thinking, like, I can't wait till I can go home?
Oh, yeah. Like,
that's another big green flag, I think. Yeah. You know, like, I can remember in my first marriage, just at some point, I was just like, does anybody want to do anything after work? Like, I was trying to find a reason not to
there,
be there.
There has been times, you know, there's been seasons of that in our marriage. But
right.
Currently, man, like, I don't know what time we're going to quit today, but I hope it's soon, because, you know, like, I'm ready to get home. I'm ready to hang out. Like, mm-hmm. When I walked through the door, it was like, oh, God, you know, what are we fixing to fight about? But now it's like, I wonder how she's going to greet me today. Like, is it going to be a hug? Is it going to be a high five? Like, what are we dealing with? But it's always positive now. You know, mm-hmm. there's not days that I don't look forward to going home.
Like, I'm not a genius, but, like, I know that God blessed me with my wife, you know, like, because I've experienced the opposite. And I don't think that I did anything particularly to deserve it, you know.
I think I did everything to not deserve it.
Yeah, 100%. That'd be more accurate.
I've even done everything since God blessed me with her to deserve her not being my wife,
mm-hmm.
you know. Like, yeah. There has not been an example of a bad husband that I haven't been, except for
Jesus.
being physically violent.
Yeah, you haven't, to my wife. Okay, so you haven't beat her.
I have never laid a hand on any woman, but well, I take that back. There was one that it was Halloween, and I did smoke this girl down, but I totally thought it was a dude. So that's got to be justified somewhere, right?
Yeah, surely.
But and I think even without it being Halloween, I would have thought it was a dude. So, I mean, she had a bat, so it was either, you know, get hit or hit. So, yeah.
Well, I'm interested in this. I know that you went to camp, like I said before, and my daughter was there. Both of y'all were there for the teen camp.
Mm-hmm.
And she loved getting to spend time with both of y'all, was super impressed with both of y'all. And then I think since you've come back, because you went to both camps, right?
I did.
And then you came back, and now you're doing youth here on Wednesdays.
Yeah, tell
me about that. Like, has that been...
So when I went to camp, it was solely out of obligation to my wife and my daughter. There was nothing else driving it except for I told them I would, so now I have to. But then while I was there, God really opened my eyes to the effect that I can have in the atmosphere that I can set for young men, and it got me hooked, man. Like, being able to direct men from, or young men from, you know, a bad, terrible, awful decision, or even, you know, a way of life, a path to Jesus, is like, that's the biggest gift I think God's ever given me.
Yeah,
you know, because I know what it's like to be on the wrong path, and for someone like Matt Clapp and Travis to, you know, invest in me enough to kind of at least put some bumpers out, like I said, you know. Yeah, it just hooked me, 100% hooked me. I was not at all expecting to have any kind of impact on the youth at, you know, from our church, or I wasn't even really expecting to get involved with them much. But from the minute we arrived, it was the spikes on my truck, I'm pretty sure. Well, but they were all drawn to me, and, you know.
It's tough to be a teenager. It's really hard to be a teenager. The three of us were teenagers at one point, and I think you can look back now and see how the small decisions that you made at that age negatively impacted you.
100%.
And yeah. So to have these, I think these kids, they're built different than we were. I mean, like, their whole environment's been different. You know, like, we got our first computer when I was in elementary school. These kids had their first computer before they were born.
Yeah.
And the access to information, I mean, there's just so much misinformation out there. But the kids are hungry for the truth, you know? Like, and I think it's easier, you know, I don't think I can coach my wife at stuff. And I've avoided somehow coaching any of my children in anything. And, but like, my daughter, like, soaked up stuff from YouTube. Thought y'all were hilarious, liked interacting with you. And like, I don't think she dislikes interacting with me. I'm going to go to camp this year, and she's going to go as a camper again. And I think she wants us to be like her response. I don't know. But I think there's some power. There's some power in that. And I was curious as to how that's manifested itself in the Wise household, like, you know,
well,
being involved in camp and then being involved in our youth now, like, has that changed something about you or brought something up in you?
Well, it has definitely made me more aware of the decisions that I make, whether it be inside the church or outside the church, because if it's one thing that I don't want to be ever is a hypocrite. That's why the sins that I do struggle with, I don't hide them from anybody. You know, like, I smoke. I'm a Marlboro smoker. I smoke, you know, 1 to 2 packs a day, depending on how stressed I am.
Yeah.
But I ain't gonna hide it from nobody. You know, I'm not gonna pretend like I've got it all together, because I definitely don't. And I think that that might be one of the things that they respect about me. Not that I'm a smoker, but that I'm not.
Transparency.
Yeah, well, I'm not trying to
hide it.
I think
you're authentic. Yeah. You know, you're believable.
And yeah. I don't think that there's a whole lot of thought that goes into it from their point of view. But from my point of view, I don't want to be that guy who is, you know, teaching follow Jesus, and then as soon as I leave, I'm not.
Right.
Like, I know what leadership like that looks like, just from, you know, experience, call it church hurt or whatever the hell you want to call it. But I don't want to be a memory in their adult life of, yeah, I had this youth group guy. He sure talked a big game, but he really wasn't about shit. You know, I don't want to be that guy. Yeah. And that motivates me in my personal life to, you know, stay on top of my shit. But at the same time, it has changed me on a personal level in some areas that I was struggling in. Like, I don't know if y'all remember or not, but there was a couple of months where I was working out of town. I definitely had the opportunity to follow through with commitments at church, but I just chose other things versus my commitments to church. I didn't really think it was that big a deal at the time, but looking back, it was a very big deal. And that was one of the things that I feel like is a big side effect of doing youth group, is I don't have the option now to be unaccountable.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, it's not about me now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, before, I could put myself at the top and just be like, you know, well, if it doesn't suit me or my schedule, then, you know, I got to do me, you know. But now that's gone. Like, I don't have that anymore, because not that I'm invested in them, but they're invested in me. Like, you know, they love me, and I'm not going to burn them just because, you know, there's something else that I'd rather do that Wednesday night, or, you know, something like that. Like, when I made a commitment to doing youth and to doing, you know, the young men's work or whatever, it was something that I had to all mind, body, and soul, I had to do it.
Invest in it.
Yes.
Completely.
Yes. Yeah. Because I knew if I didn't, then I would kind of fall back into some old habits and let somebody down. And I love these kids, man. Like my own. I mean, half of them have worked for me, you know.
Yeah.
When they're out of school, like I had two of them text me just a while ago. Hey, can we work Saturday? You know, like they genuinely do care about me. They care about my family. And, you know, obviously that's reciprocal. But doing youth has done nothing but change me for the better. And I wholeheartedly believe that.
So what's next for you? And, in church, I think, you know, we've got a unique setup here, you know, where I think most of the men that I know here at church are really authentic, and I can count on them, you know, like, you know, we plan to record this and here we are now recording. I can't tell you many other outlets or things I've been involved in my life, even when I thought people were high level, where they like made it happen. You know, like if a guy in our group says, I'll be there, then they're going to be there.
Yeah.
And that's like a level of respect that, you know, I had the same conversation today with Sebastian in the car on the way home from school. I'm like, the behavior that you've engaged in shows me that you don't have self-respect. Not that you disrespected the teacher, not that you disrespected me and your mom, but like you don't respect yourself, you know? He's like, I guess I'm just a bad kid.
you know.
Okay, dude.
Yeah.
So
enjoy your chicken nuggets.
I think that a lot of the men in our church have run pretty far from God at some point in our life, and we're doing the best we can to like hang on to his belt buckle right now. And it's an amazing opportunity to get to greet new men into that lifestyle and to help guide the next generation into that lifestyle. I think we're headed that place, like as a nation right now, the way the election went, the way church leadership is going, like this younger generation, you know, the 30 and 40 year olds are going to be running stuff, you know?
I think that's just natural progression, but our church is the exception to the rule in the fact that, like, we say what we mean and mean what we say. I don't think commitment or the lack of is necessarily the problem or the answer, but men who are willing to stand up and do what it takes is the answer. Mm-hmm. And our church definitely has that.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as what I'm going to do next in church, I don't really know yet. There are some things that are on my heart, but I don't know if it's on my heart for like personal or if it needs to be a church thing or whatever, but
mm-hmm.
I am exploring those options, and I think I've actually talked to you about it a couple times.
Mm-hmm.
I want to either open up a food pantry or something along those lines. And what I'm in the process of right now is learning a good system on how to make that happen. Yeah. That way I'm not flying into this blind and, you know,
yeah.
I can add to or take away from the things that I don't like about someone else's system, but I just want to perfect it for what's best for us and our vision for what we want to do.
Yeah, somebody else has already probably figured out how to distribute food.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I've seen with a lot of people is they always want to pioneer a lot of stuff and not partner.
Yeah.
I think that's something that is really important to think of. And, you know, when you're in a community and you see these other people that have done it this way, and there's a few kinks in, you know, the rope and a few things here and there, but you can learn from those and you can set those systems up to improve it and make it better for you. So
I think there's a lot of things to be said about that partner, don't pioneer. Just that can go into so many different facets of life. I mean, think about, you know, our Freedom Weekend, mm-hmm. you know, Travis took an already awesome program and modified it to fit him and his vision for this church, and just look at the lives that have been changed from it. I mean, when I went through Freedom, I was at a point of my life where I was most definitely unworthy. I was carrying weight around from bad decisions that, I mean, I really didn't even realize I was carrying until it all got brought to the surface. And Freedom has definitely changed my life for the better.
Yeah, me too.
Same.
Well, this has been an episode of Two Dudes, One God Pod. We thank you for listening. I hope this has blessed you. Thank you, David Wise. What a blessing you've been. This has been a really great conversation. I also want to note that I did get notice from Chance Fagan that he's not opposed to the idea that the earth is flat. So.
Sounds like something Pat said a minute ago.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Hmm.
So I thought that I went to church with people that believed the earth was round.
But I thought appears. I went to church with Christians. Y'all going to hell.
Welcome to East Texas, man.